Is service design a multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary, or a transdisciplinary practice? What is the difference between these terms anyway? And does it really matter? Spoiler alert, it does. Stick around for all the answers. Hi, my name is Mark Fontijn, and welcome back to a brand new episode of The Service Design Show. I'll be honest, I've been using the terms multi, inter, and transdisciplinary quite loosely over the years without giving them too much thought. But when today's guest, Ulrika Degerman, suggested that we unpack these terms in our Circle community and explore what the differences are, I was all in. Because as you'll hear, there are differences, for sure. And the reason that this matters is very simple. Designing great services is a process which involves many different disciplines. As a service design professional, you're always working with experts from other fields. But are you collaborating in a multi, inter, or transdisciplinary way? Regardless, whether you're aware of it or not, you're doing one of them. It's just like with service design. Every company is already doing it, just most of them don't do it in a conscious way. So rather than navigating in the dark, let's shine a light on these different ways of working, because when you have the basic understanding of these concepts and their characteristics, you can shape more meaningful interactions with your colleagues. We're not only going to explore these ways of working in theory, but also look at what they mean in practice. Which of them lends itself for which type of challenge? How do you transition from one approach to the other? And does transdisciplinary way of working lead to better results? If you stick around till the end of this episode, you'll be able to make a more informed decision about which way of working suits you and your current challenge, rather than just going by what's already in place. Well, that already wraps up the introduction. The only thing left for me to say right now is let the show begin. Welcome to the show, Ulrika.
Oh, hi, Mark. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, good to see you. This is going to be a special podcast episode for many reasons, but one of the reasons is that you were or was the first host of our second Circle group, and the Circle group that is formed to accommodate service design practitioners in Asia, Australia, with a mix of Europe. And you had the opportunity to, well, you volunteered and you had the courage to be the first host. How was that for you?
It was really fantastic. I was actually so excited. So it's a great opportunity, and I really love having all the different workshops and discussing the topic at hand.
Yeah, a small teaser there. It's really nice to be able to sort of span, I think right now, almost the entire world and time zones, and that we can cater for any service design professional, no matter where they are. I don't think we'll need to see if we're missing some time zones, but I think we're pretty good on that. Ulrika, you sort of took up on the challenge to explore with our members the topic of transdisciplinary design, correct?
Indeed. Yes.
Indeed. What made you interested in this topic?
Yeah, so when someone mentioned the topic of transdisciplinarity, as someone that's an interdisciplinarian and realized that it can be quite confusing to distinguish between multidisciplinarity, interdisciplinarity, and transdisciplinarity, I thought this is a great time for me to just explain the differences, because I think in the world of service design, you have different disciplines interlinking between each other in different ways. So I thought this is a great chance to do a deep dive into how that interacts and to get a range of service design's opinions on how it works in the real world.
Yeah, transdisciplinary, these are really easy words to stumble upon many times. So transdisciplinary, multidisciplinarity, and interdisciplinarity, right? Those were the three key things that we sort of tried to distinguish. And I think one of the good things to do at the start of this conversation is maybe to give a brief introduction and maybe even a definition. So for somebody listening, how would you describe these three, disciplines? Yeah.
So the way that I would describe it is in a multidisciplinary team, you would have people of different disciplines working together. So you sort of get that in sort of healthcare settings where you have, workers from different types of healthcare when a person has a range of issues. They're working together. But interdisciplinarity is where it's all interlinking. So you're creating like shared domains. And that occurs when you have like new subjects being created to disciplines. An example of that is like neuromarketing. So I have neuroscience and marketing, like that comes together, and service design does that quite a lot because you have different areas of work and you're constantly having to bring together and explore different approaches from those two disciplines. And transdisciplinarity is sort of similar to interdisciplinarity, but the way that I would describe it differently is that a new framework is generated as a result of all of that cross-cutting work or that collaboration together. But for a more detailed description of those different terms, could be quite hard to even visualize. There is that research paper that I described in the workshop that people can look into.
So if I correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm going to try to summarize. So interdisciplinarity is where multiple disciplines work together in a team, let's say. Multidisciplinarity is going to be where multiple disciplines work together to create a new framework, right?
Transdisciplinarity, the idea of creation.
That's the creation. So where does multidisciplinarity sit?
It's when you have a meeting. So typically you have people coming together and they present different expertises together. And even that can be quite difficult to occur because in organization, and we discuss a lot about organizational silos, you don't even have that coming together. So I guess multidisciplinarity is the first step, really.
Okay. So I mixed up multidisciplinarity and interdisciplinarity. I was looking for your neuromarketing example, and that's neuromarketing is interdisciplinarity.
Exactly. This is quite complex. I would say when trying to visualize these different concepts, very difficult over audio. But in the paper, they sort of describe it as, for example, a fruit salad as multidisciplinarity, and then you have like a chunky soup as interdisciplinarity, and then you have a cake where you bring the ingredients together, create something new, and that is transdisciplinarity. But I forgive anyone who can't really understand the concept first time round. It does take a while to get around because we're not actually used to working in these types of ways in the general organization. Like I said, most people work in silos, so it's very new.
Mm. And I like that metaphor, and it works for me. Sort of the salad, the soup, and the cake. I think that's a good start. Now, when you say people don't work this way, I was curious when we sort of touched upon this topic. How is this relevant to a service design professional to sort of have an understanding of these three areas and What are the implications for us?
I'm sure that us as service designers know that service design is a team sport. You can't do it alone, and you certainly can't do it staring at a screen and not interacting with other service designers and also with other disciplines. And that's where the three concepts come in, because it's important to realize how you want to work with one another, depending on what project you're working on, what outcomes you want to achieve. So you could say that these are three models to, I guess, think about how you want to be working with other people. So,
and is, from your perspective, one better than the other, or more important, or is there a hierarchy? How do you see these things?
That's a great question. It's actually something that we explored in the workshop, because sometimes transdisciplinarity, where you do create a new framework, that's not often always what you want to achieve. So I wouldn't say that one is better than the other. It's more about which one is best suited to what you're working on. But I have an understanding of how different people with different expertises and different experiences can interact together, and picking the right one, that's key, I feel.
Okay, maybe we can dive for a moment a bit deeper into this topic. So, but how do you pick the right one? What is the right one?
That's a very good question. I think it would depend on context. For example, say if you have lots of people working together, you want them all talking with one another, then I guess one of the either interdisciplinarity or multidisciplinarity would work, because you're wanting that conversation to get going. And I guess it depends on the degree whether you want that kind of shared domain happening. But in multidisciplinarity, it's that input from different expertises, but you don't essentially want them necessarily working on that shared domain. this is quite confusing. I think it works better with a practical case study. So I'm sitting here thinking of, I guess, a hypothetical example. But I guess, say, if you're working on a very complex problem and you want to hear different perspectives on a particular problem, then yes, multidisciplinarity. But when you want that more interaction and a more interdisciplinary approach is more appropriate, where especially when there are two disciplines that are so different to one another.
So let's brainstorm a bit on practical examples. So for instance, where you have a service design professional or service design team that brings in a data scientist. The moment that data scientist becomes involved in actually creating the solution, like you said, interacting, then we move from a multidisciplinary team or multidisciplinarity to interdisciplinarity. Like, you're not just bringing them in to share knowledge, you're actually bringing them in to collaborate and work together with you. I don't know if that's, maybe you can help me to sharpen this example.
Yeah, I think the key is the word inter. This idea that you have two, I guess, very different disciplines working together. So an example of the data scientist, they may work with the user researcher. They may also work with, I'm trying to think of another discipline, but maybe that psychologist to actually interpret the data from the psychologist's perspective. So it's really about the boundary between those two different disciplines that you might not necessarily have noticed before. But in multidisciplinarity, you might call on the psychologist for their view and call on the data scientist for their view, but they're not having their own separate conversation, if you see what I mean.
Yes. So you're almost, and we're going to cut corners here for sake of simplicity, but you're almost like in an interdisciplinarity, you're working together towards one shared, I don't know, artifact, document, idea, vision, solution. And you're all responsible for that idea, solution, concept. Sort of. It's different than multidisciplinarity.
Yeah, you would just call on their perspectives. So yes, you're having everyone in the room, but you're not actually seeing the interlinking relationships between data science and marketing, or marketing and user research, for example. Interdisciplinarity, as it suggests, is about the interlinking between disciplines. So you could almost say that multidisciplinarity is a central point of contact, and the disciplines come towards, I guess, for example, the project owner. That tends to happen in meetings, for example, but they're not speaking between each other. That's what interdisciplinarity is all about.
Well, that's a very, at least in my head, that starts to crystallize and visualize, and that central point of context makes sense. And again, maybe we're cutting corners, but I think this helps to sort of paint a picture here. Now, let's take this one step further. So we have our psychologist, we have our data scientist, we have our marketing professional, we have our copywriter. How do we go from being an interdisciplinary team to a transdisciplinary team? Like, what would be the situation there?
I would say that it comes organically. I think when you move into transdisciplinarity, you're creating something new that's not been envisioned before. And that only happens when you get people speaking to one another and you discover insights that you realize, oh, I didn't realize that that's happening. And thanks to your perspective, we can actually do this and can do that. And then you bring in the services, our methodologies, like prototype, experimenting and trying things out. So you could say that there is a journey from multidisciplinarity, interdisciplinarity, and it could lead to transdisciplinarity. But it's very hard to get to transdisciplinarity when you don't have people talking together in the first place and exploring their own domains.
And like you said, it's not like transdisciplinarity is the holy grail. It's you don't always need it to sort of solve the challenge at hand. There are certain, I'm assuming there are certain types of challenges that do require a transdisciplinary approach, but it's not the best solution. Like you said, it depends on the context.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, perhaps, some of your listeners could disagree with me, but I don't think transdisciplinarity is the aim. You know, you're not working towards to create a new framework. I guess that defeats the purpose. I think if you're all working together and it's being open-minded, and that's something that we discussed a lot in the workshops, being open-minded to different perspectives, you just never know that there might be something that's born out of that, a new way of thinking, a new way of doing things. So yeah, it's not a means to an end, I would say.
And like, if we say it's not a means to an end, the end is more collaboration, creating better services like that's and breaking down the silos, as you mentioned, because we're not even seeing like multidisciplinary collaboration happening, right?
Sometimes, yeah, I guess it depends on the organization. I know that some of the participants mentioned some challenges, you know, from the culture that's driven from the top, and ways that there could be like, you know, bureaucratic reasons and the concept of the hero designer. And there were lots of different ways that there could be intangible and also tangible barriers that prevent genuine, true collaboration. But I would say if we foster that collaboration and organization, then interdisciplinarity naturally arises. And once you naturally have that collaboration, then you get onto transdisciplinarities. But at heart of it, it's about how an organization is sort of fostering the conditions and the culture to allow that creativity between people who wouldn't necessarily speak to each other.
Now that you've explored this topic yourself a bit more in depth and we've had this conversation inside the circle, how do you feel it helps you to have this language, this vocabulary? Are you finding ways to apply this, and does it make your life easier or maybe harder?
Yeah, I think reflecting on it, I think the terms can be a bit jargony, and I think that can almost be a barrier in itself. And, you know, one of the that was mentioned in the workshops that even the word design can be a bit off-putting. So I think there is scope actually, and maybe that is a design challenge that we could present to our members about how to take the theoretical concepts of multidisciplinarity, interdisciplinarity and transdisciplinarity into something that's a bit more practical, a bit more relatable. Yes, these are concepts that are actually defined by these academics. It's still theoretical, and I think the challenge is to make it a bit more relatable.
And I think we're doing a pretty good job by talking about soup and cakes and salads. That's a first good step. Are you finding ways, again, to sort of put this into practice? I know this session isn't all that long ago, but has it changed your perspective on how you work or how you maybe communicate with people inside your organization?
Yeah, I think that made me realize that it's actually in practice quite difficult even to get people speaking to one another. I have ideas about how we could, you know, get people speaking to one another, but that takes, you know, a lot of courage, especially where sometimes it's not the way it's done. You just focus on your own little thing, your own little project. But just for context, I'm a service designer within a department, and that department is part of a wider organization. I think possibly would be easier in organizations that are more design orientated, but again, that comes from the top down, from the corporate leadership. So I think there's a lot of scope to think about how we actually design organizations and whether it could be redesigned to ensure that people are not just stuck in their own one little job function.
Yeah. We need to collaborate as our challenges that we're working on are more complex, and they require multiple disciplines to come together and look at challenges from different perspectives. This is a topic that we've touched upon often in the Service Design Show, but I'm curious to hear from you. What are some of the roadblocks that you've heard inside the Circle community that people experience to actually put this in to practice? Like, what's causing people to stay inside their cubicles and inside their own departments and silos?
I think there can often be that feeling that because you feel alone, and even if there is that desire to wanting to connect with other people, organizations, sometimes you might not even know who they are. You might not know if they have that readiness to collaborate. You know, some people can be stuck in their own ways. Some people have a resistance to change.
The topic that we're talking about in this episode is inspired by the conversations we've had in our Circle community. If you're not familiar with the Circle, let me quickly fill you in, as it might be something that you're also interested in joining. When you're an in-house service design professional, it can be really hard to find people around you who truly understand what you do and who can help you to grow as a professional. That's why a few years ago I started The Circle. Above all, The Circle is a community for in-house service design professionals who want to deepen their craft and get better at what they do. It's a safe space where you can connect with like-minded peers from leading companies across the world and learn from their stories. Inside the circle, we get to address the nitty-gritty stuff of what it means to actually do service design inside a large organization, rather than the textbook version of it. As a member of the circle, you get to join multiple meetings each and every month, ranging from sessions where we deep dive into specific topics like the one that we're talking about today, to more informal meetings where you can have the hallway or water cooler conversations with your fellow service design geeks. So to wrap this up, if you're an in-house service design professional who is creating a better future for your company and customers, and you could use some help in overcoming the many-headed monster, also known as the status quo, while you're trying to survive and thrive in the organizational jungle, then I encourage you to join us in the circle. To learn how you can become a member of this community, head over to servicedesignshow.com/circle. There you'll find all the details and instructions on how to apply. So that's servicedesignshow.com/circle, and you'll also find the link in the show notes of this episode. And now let's get back into our conversation.
What I like to think of it is to reframe it and see that as a challenge in itself. Like, how can we get people who may be feeling alone to collaborate with one another? And I guess the first step is finding those allies so that you're not alone, because it's easier to break organizational silos when you have the numbers to do so.
Yeah, that was one of the questions I had here on my notes. So what is the first step? So let's imagine I'm listening to this conversation. I'm a service design professional, and I would love to work with other disciplines inside my organization. What would you do? Like, what piece of, not even advice, what would you do?
Something that I can actually have done is actually started an innovation discussion network in my own organization. I thought, just put it out there in the internal comms and be like, hey, everyone, if you're interested in discussing innovation and transformation in the public sector, this is your opportunity to, you know, get together. Let me know if you're interested. I could add you to the group. And what I did specifically is to reinforce that it is a safe space. It's an informal, it's relaxed, and that people are there because they share this desire to think things differently. And I think it's about creating that space somewhere within an organization, but reaffirming that it is okay to dissent here. It is okay to offer different ideas, because, you know, there's lots of research out there stating that many employees feel they don't have the ability to speak up, or they don't feel comfortable offering a different opinion. So I think about creating a space, and sometimes it might be you that has to do it, which can be quite difficult, but yeah.
I really like this example, because what I'm hearing and reading between the lines is that there is no direct challenge that you want to connect upon our project. You're like, let's talk about, who wants to talk about innovation in the public sector, or who else is interested in this topic? And you sort of try to find, like you said, allies, but around a theme or a topic or a passion, and and that allows you to build those connections, build those relationships, get to know each other during the moment that there is no pressure of actually having to deliver on a deadline or, I don't know, a challenge. And then when the time comes, it's way easier to find the people you need to collaborate with.
Yeah, absolutely. You just wanting to invite people for a conversation, it's actually the barrier is quite low. And so, you know, people find it quite difficult when there's a lot of effort to get involved in something, but when the barrier's low, people are more willing to try things out, test the waters, and they realize that actually, yeah, this is something that I can do. So I really like the way that you phrased, in the sense that there's no pressure to deliver. This is just about getting together. I would say that is the first step.
Yeah, and we make it sound easy, and it is not complicated, like starting a lunch group or lean coffee meetup at your place, or a Slack channel. Don't do a Slack channel, do something physical in the real world. But yeah, you have to sort of carve out the time and see the value of doing this maybe as an activity when nobody has invited you or asked you to do this, because you see that it's going to sort of pay off in the long run. I can imagine that that's the challenge. It's not on your job description to start to networking or to start a network or a meetup or a lean coffee, but still you sort of, yeah, have to do it for the long run.
Ultimately, yes. And I think that by building these relationships, organically, not because you're forced to, because you've been assigned on a project and then you're having to go out to people, you're actually starting from a place where you actually know each other, you feel more comfortable. And then, as you say, when the time comes, that means you can actually deliver together in an environment knowing that it's actually okay to offer a different perspective.
And that is so, again, I strongly support that idea. And I can imagine it's so hard to escape from the day-to-day activities and find the time and space and rest to explore these kind of connections. How do you do that? Because you say you started something. Where did you find the time?
I guess, well, because it's something that I'm really interested in, I make the time. And I think when people are interested in doing something better and want to make services a lot better for their residents, and this is particularly in the case of the public sector, people do come to the public sector to want to do good. I think people will make the time. But of course, there are barriers in the way, for example, meetings, people not being available for whatever reason. And actually, it was that hesitancy of thinking, oh my gosh, I can't even find a time where people can actually get together. And so that actually delayed things a little bit. But I said to myself, you know what? I'm just going to pick a slot, put it out there. Well, in the end, I did two slots, so people did have the option. And if they can't come, they can't come. But if people can, they can. But at least it's getting the ball rolling. And then you can always iterate, always prototype a different time slot or a different way of doing things. But I think, as with anything, it's just about getting started. It's not going to be perfect at the start. But if you're always holding out for the perfect, you're never going to achieve great things. I think there's a quote about, the perfect being the enemy of great, or the enemy of the good. And I think, yeah, we discussed that a lot about the workshop. You just have to get started, really.
Yeah, and don't make it too complex for yourself. Any other tips in this direction? So you put out two slots out there for people to actually, I don't know, have lunch, or what did you do? And I'm curious if you have heard other examples that could help people get started in an easy, accessible way.
Yeah, I think that's something that I'm keen to do myself. So see other examples in different organizations where they did try to start up, like staff networks to foster great collaboration. I think there are organizations that are doing more from a top-down method, but this was a more bottom-up initiative. So yeah, I'd be really keen to hear if there are actually any other people listening to this who have actually tried to start something in their organization to foster more interdisciplinary working, rather than meetings where you call on people to be involved, but and then they take the actions away, but there's no actual interaction. I think interdisciplinarity is where you get that genuine interaction, and you never know, it may lead to creating something new, creating a better service in the end.
One of the things that I sort of didn't highlight, but you just mentioned again, there are a lot of examples of specific guilds inside organizations, community of practices. But what's interesting here is this isn't per se a community of practice for service design professionals inside your organization. This is like an overarching topic. Around, I don't know, improving the public sector, where you bring multiple disciplines together. It could be accounting, it could be HR, it could be your CEO. So I think that's something which is key to highlight, that it's not just about meeting with your fellow peers to deepen your craft. Like that's also an important thing, but this is really to create those cross-discipline connections.
Absolutely. I think it could be, one has to be very mindful about sticking to peers that, know all about service design and design thinking methods and things like that. But actually, there's a lot of potential out there from people who actually have no idea about design in general, or wouldn't be able to explain to you what service design is, but they're thinking in that way. They just use it in a different, they may use different different words, they may do things differently, but it's all about the mindset. And I think that's something to recognize, that that terms can be off-putting. And it's why I actually didn't use the term service design when I was discussing about this in my own organization. And yeah, I think at the beginning, I think even in the beginning of this podcast, those very long words can be off-putting. So I didn't even mention the word interdisciplinary. I use a term, the the term cross-departmental, because that's something that's actually more relatable, people from different departments. But that's actually what interdisciplinarity means. I didn't want to use the word transdisciplinary because people would be like, what is that? But the idea that we could do something different, that's more relatable. And I think ultimately that's the core thing that I want to bring through in this podcast, that yes, with this podcast is about, you know, transdisciplinarity and the other associated terms, but actually it's about bringing things back together down to earth.
Yeah. And a simple word would be like breaking down silos. That's the thing we often hear and see people talk about. But this is how you do it. Like you physically bring people together to discuss an overarching topic and get to learn from each other. And you mentioned it's not a group of service design professionals, but there might be people who are already applying that mindset. But I think it's also the other way around. When you can probably learn a lot from an HR professional or a marketing professional, and maybe they'll say, well, you're already doing a lot of marketing thinking. I don't know if that's actually a term.
That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, so I think it has to work both ways, and it's definitely not just about putting design on the map, but it's also absorbing, like, what can I learn from HR? Like, what are you actually doing as an HR professional?
That is a very good point. It actually reminds me of, I know we're going a bit off tangent here, but it reminds me of a concept called like the T-shaped skills framework, where you're very specialized in one domain, but you also have an awareness of other different subjects, disciplines, and things like that.
Yeah, and that's maybe like the T-shaped people. If you look at the circle, I think the circle is a community for people who want to deepen their craft as service design professionals. They go down on the T. What you're describing and what we're describing here is much more about the top section, the horizontal section of the T, and creating those kind of connections and the developing that. I don't know if it's a skill, it's an attitude, it's a vocabulary. I think that's a different kind of community and skill.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of looking at it. This idea that, you know, we're deepening our craft, but also still being open-minded enough to appreciate all of the different perspectives out there. And I think actually that's a much more useful way of describing interdisciplinarity, really. I do think that these terms can be a bit off-putting, but yeah, I think we've been quite productive in this podcast, thinking of ways of how to explore this concept. And yeah, I think there is some scope in using the T-shaped model as a way of facilitating all of these concepts.
Yeah, probably one of the, I think one of the outcomes of this will be that, one, you will recognize when you need to call in a different expert on a specific topic, and two, you will realize that there are so many other things that you actually have no clue about. And sort of that awareness, like unveiling the unknown unknown and making it into the known unknown, that's like the big benefit, like shining a light on your blind spots.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, just appreciating that, you know, where your skills and strengths, you know, lie. So having that self-awareness that, you know, you're very good at this thing, but you're not so in this thing. So you will call out another person and see if you can work together or get their expertise in. So, and I think it's that self-awareness that's going to be really helpful, because I think when you're working on, you know, service design projects, you realize that, you know, you can't do it on your own. So being able to recognize when and how you're going to bring in people who can offer extra value, I think that's going to be key to delivering really good services.
Yeah. Yeah. Because again, we're sort of maybe circling around it. But that's the whole point in the end. You want to deliver better services, and you can, although we might hope and think that service design is a key player there, it's just one of the elements. Like, we're just one of the moving parts inside a much bigger system, and we need to collaborate with everybody. Everybody needs to be involved. I wanted to say we need to involve everybody, but it's not even our role. Like, everybody has to be involved.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is, I mean, it's what attracted me to service design in the first place, this idea that we could be the facilitators of bringing people together, because ultimately great services are when you do get people who can look at service from different ways, and from the front stage and the backstage, and from the perspective of the marginalized person, or from the person who's been running the service operationally for many, many years. When you bring all of that together, that's how you can deliver the real improvements that need to be made.
Yeah, and having the holistic perspective. There are so many things that we could put under this umbrella, why this is a good idea. But I have a different question. Again, when you were exploring this and you were hearing the different perspectives inside the Circle community on this topic, did that leave you with some new questions or things that you were curious about and would like to explore?
Definitely. I think I, after running that workshop, was thinking, wow, there's so many different ideas in the first place. And I think it's about how to make sense of all of these different ideas. And I think that's why it's so important to keep on having these conversations and actually seeing how it works in practice. So seeing how, I think case studies are going to be quite crucial. So something that I'm looking into, seeing how do people actually foster interdisciplinary collaboration? When have there been times that there's been a new framework created? What are the limitations of having meetings where you do have people together in the room, but people are not interacting? So I think this is a very, this is the early stage of something bigger. I'm not too sure what it could be called or what it should be called, but definitely a lot of questions. And yeah, it's a point of my own personal research, actually, the way that different disciplines combine together, interact with one another, and how people interact with one another.
Yeah. Super interesting and super important. And I think this is one of those things that a lot of service design professionals do by nature and don't even label it, but it helps when you have a language and you have tools, when you know what to Google. There are so many, probably already many, many, many people have studied this, and there is a lot of reading and knowledge and science about how we can do this better. One related thing to this is, I'm curious, what do you wish you had known about this topic, let's say 3 years ago?
About transdisciplinarity.
And maybe the difference between multi and interdisciplinarity.
Yeah, I think it's outlined in that Pak and Choi paper that actually, well, they actually sum it up beautifully, that actually it's all interchangeable. And so what they try to do is to try to find specific definitions for each of those terms, which can be helpful, actually, but it can also present its own problems because, again, a lot of that research has already been done. They use it in a very interchangeable way. So maybe this is actually a point in time where we create new words that are more relatable, because I think, as you say, we do need a common language. And if people are already interchanging the terms, even despite an attempt to have precise definitions, maybe that signals a time for us to think about how do we want to describe ways in which we can work that is actually accessible and not using terms that are quite similar. I think, I can appreciate that the average man on the street can be a bit confused as to the specific differences. And you can see that even earlier in this podcast, quite very difficult to explain the nuances. So I think there is scope actually for further developing their research into something that's a bit more relatable, that anyone can understand and just get.
Hmm. And I definitely won't forget after this conversation the salad, the soup, and the cake. Like, that's going to stick with me, whether you like it or not. But
yeah, it was mentioned in that paper, actually. I thought I wish they actually made a better explanation of that, because I think, visual imagery, that is so helpful, really.
Yeah, and probably and hopefully somebody who's listening to this will come up with some other analogies and metaphors that can help to grasp this topic, because like you say, it does sound a bit alien and conceptual, but the underlying thought is of course a great one that we need to collaborate more together. So Erika, if somebody made it all the way here to this point in our conversation, what is the one thing you hope that they at least will take away?
Yeah, the one thing is that collaboration is key. And if you think that collaboration is not happening, take the very first step to making that happen. And that could be as simple as having a conversation with people.
Great. Let's leave it at that. Thank you for joining me here on the show today. Thank you for hosting this topic. There will be many more Circle sessions to come. And I'm really excited that this new group has started. So looking forward to what the other topics will bring. But once again, thank you, Arika, for coming on.
And thank you, Mark, for inviting me to speak. It's been a pleasure.
I found it fascinating to deep dive into inter, multi, and transdisciplinary and understand the differences between these ways of working. I hope that you enjoyed this conversation as well and got something useful out of it. Once again, a big thanks to Arika for coming on and sharing the highlights from the Circle with us. As a closing note, I want to remind you that if you want to get all the ins and outs of the things we discuss inside the community and not just a summary here on the podcast, then I invite you to join us in the Circle. You'll meet other passionate service designers who are on a journey to become more mature and well-rounded professionals. We have multiple groups inside our community with members from over a dozen different countries. So regardless where you are in the world, we'll probably have a group that fits your time zone. There's really no need you face the battle against the many-headed monster known as the status quo inside your organization all by yourself. Inside the Circle, you'll find a whole community that has your back and will be rooting for you. There is an application process to become a member of the Circle, so if you'd like to know if you qualify, head over to servicedesignshow.com/circle for all the details, and you'll also find the link in the show notes of this episode. My name is Mark Fontaine, and I want to thank you for spending a small part of your day with me. It's an absolute honor and pleasure. Please keep making a positive impact, and I'll catch you very soon in a brand new episode of The Service Design Show. See you then.